This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyik. It's been quite an exciting day on the political front, at least. Of course, just to quickly catch you up, we're hearing a lot of news related to Prime Minister Tun Dr. Mahathir resigning as Prime Minister, also as Bersatu Chairman. And on top of those developments, we've just seen a tweet from the Minister of Health, Dato' Sri Dr. Zulkifli Ahmad, as well as Agriculture Minister Salehuddin Ayub. They tweeted that they are leaving their ministerial positions effective immediately, although the respective ministers, ministries have not released any official statements about those resignations or about them being relieved of their positions. So we'll be keeping an eye on that. But, you know, on to other issues that are still pertinent and require our attention. The Minister of Health also tweeted that two more patients who had been treated for COVID-19 have recovered and been discharged. And that is exactly what we are talking about today on Health and Living, looking at the COVID-19 outbreak. In particular, GPs, the primary care physicians, are definitely the first line of response to any health issues among the community. And it's no different for the current COVID-19 outbreak as well. So what we'd like to do today is to take a look at how GPs should respond to suspected cases, as well as the steps that they should take to protect the health of the doctors and staff in the clinics. But just a note, of course, we are also hearing news that DAP is going to hold a press conference. So as soon as we hear news of that, we'll be crossing over to that. But meanwhile, Dr. Thirunavukarasu Raju, Honorary General Secretary of the Malaysian Medical Association, is in the studio with me. Good afternoon, Dr. Arasu. How are you today?
A very good afternoon, Xiaoyik.
Yes.
Very, very fine today.
Yes.
I think everyone is having palpitations.
Yes, that's right. It's a good thing we have a doctor in the house then. coming back to COVID-19, of course, we can't forget that that is an important issue that the world is tackling right now. And of course, Malaysia seems to be doing quite okay in terms of containing the infections. Lots of the people who have been tested positive for COVID have recovered and have been discharged. No new cases today. Going by the news updates from the Ministry of Health. But let's look at the primary care level in terms of especially private GP clinics, because those are your primary stakeholders for MMA. How are they currently affected by the COVID-19 outbreak?
Okay, at the moment, as we know, an estimated of 70 million patients visits GP clinics in a year. So from that, almost 70% of them are simple acute illness.
Mm-hmm.
And from that, sizable numbers are actually acute respiratory infection. So beginning of this year, and also the late last year, since influenza, there's been lots of frenzy and then panic started with that.
Mm-hmm.
Then subsequently on the Wuhan coronavirus at that point of time, later named as COVID-19. Since then, we have been having quite a number of patients who are very worried, who are panicking, and then seeking informations. Because most of the patients that we see in our clinics are actually family patients. They come in a family, children, so they're very worried.
Mm-hmm.
But then one incident whereby when there was a case noted in one of the clinics in Banting,
mm-hmm.
When it was announced by the netizens, not the Ministry of Health,
mm-hmm.
by the netizen, that actually created panic. And then we see a drop in patients because they are worried that the GP clinics might be a center of to get these kind of infections
mm-hmm.
at that point of time.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, I think the GPs have been very alert. They have been updating themselves and then keeping in line with the latest guidelines from the Ministry of Health. And then the Malaysian Medical Association, we also have been playing our part by uploading latest information in our website, sending emails to our members, and also to follow all the infection control and the protocols advised by the Ministry of Health.
Mm, so that's something that we'd like to go into in a little bit more detail, just to find out exactly what is the advice that you're giving to GP clinics, so that, you know, and the idea is we want to reassure patients. Like you said, we don't want that kind of panic and fear because... And really, in some ways, as we've seen in you know, some examples in Singapore and Hong Kong, right? The fear spreads faster than the virus itself. But from there are something like, am I right, 6,000 GP clinics in the country?
We have close to 7,000.
Sorry, 7,000, yeah. I mean, just from your communication with the GP clinics across the country, what's the situation on the ground? Are many people going to the clinics with respiratory symptoms that they think may be related to COVID?
What we have noticed is that, especially in urban areas, we noticed there was a surge before the Banting incident. It was basically out of fear.
Mm-hmm.
So as we know that based on the guidelines, if you have a fever or any respiratory infection, cough, flu, or having shortness of breath, so everyone is worried. Mm-hmm. Shortness of breath not necessarily is a lung infection. Even when you have nose block, is a shortness. You can have shortness of breath.
Mm-hmm.
So that they just want to be sure. So we notice that they do come and they say, can you please check on these, check on influenza. We saw this surge during that point of time.
Mm. I mean, are the GPs in the country equipped not only with that kind of information for infection control and referral, but in terms of specialization, perhaps are GPs equipped to deal with infectious disease outbreaks in the country?
I would say there is no proper training in terms of from the Ministry of Health, but as medical professions and then going through the training in the as a houseman as also as a medical officer, we are all trained to a certain level of infection control, not per se on the outbreak. The management is the same until unless the government, the Ministry of Health, comes out with a new guidelines how to handle specific outbreaks, then otherwise the protocols remains the same.
Mm. Can we talk a little bit about what the protocols are, just at the most fundamental level?
Okay, the basic thing is that, like say, for example, in this case, COVID-19, the government has, the Ministry of Health has already given a clear guideline, how do you classify COVID-19? So the GPs we are doing is that MMA has come out with a template where we paste it outside the clinic to inform them if the patient's having such and such, they go to the nearest clinic, nearest hospital as per the list given by the Ministry of Health. But in the event, if they walk into the clinic, then we have also informed our nurses how to pick up these kind of cases. So let's say if the person qualifies the definition, the first thing the nurses will do is that, number one, they will sanitize their hand, mm-hmm. the patient's hand. Number two, they give the mask so that the patient, they don't cough. The next thing what they do is that they inform the doctor. And then the doctor will go to the counter and the doctor will do a visual and verbal triaging. So once the doctor is satisfied that this particular patient fulfilled the criteria and then classify under person under investigation, and then the doctor will take the person and isolate the person. And most likely in a GP setting, they may use the treatment room.
Mm-hmm.
So once the person is isolated there, the person will be given a tissue box, will be given a biological waste bin, and then will be kept there. And then the doctor will call the health officers, and then while waiting for them to come,
mm-hmm.
and then the patient will be there and then will be isolated from the other patients.
Okay, all right. In terms of isolating the patient, does the clinic, even if it is, there's a treatment room available, does the clinic need special infrastructure for that purpose?
Based on the current case, we do not need special infrastructure for that. We do not need. Mm. We can just isolate as long as it's a place where it's not together with the other patients. Mm. Should be fine.
Okay. And in terms then of, because there needs to be that sort of almost like a triaging process. First is to identify if they have either traveled to China or come into contact with somebody who has tested positive for COVID. If somebody has the respiratory symptoms but doesn't have those links, doesn't have a link to another patient or has not, traveled anywhere perhaps, what would the next steps be?
If they do not fulfill the criteria of traveling or the contact person, we will treat them just like any other patients.
Okay.
Any other patients. And then if, let's say, they have developed a fever for 2 or 3 days, normally most of the clinics nowadays, what we'll do a full blood count.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a hematology analyzer.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, number one issue in Malaysia is always dengue fever. So whenever somebody is having fever,
yes,
we have to make sure we're very, very sensitive towards what is the current in Malaysia first.
Mm.
So that's what we're doing.
All right. Okay. And what about, you know, so let's say if the patient is suspected to have COVID or to have respiratory symptoms that may point to COVID, and the clinic follows those protocols, after the patient has been sent to the proper Ministry of Health facility for proper testing, you know, what can the clinic do to ensure that its staff and other patients are protected as well?
Okay, number one is that preventive measures. The number one preventive measures is that when the patient walks in, suspect, we sanitize the hand, and our staffs also, they will be wearing masks, and the doctor will be wearing masks, and then they'll make sure the hand hygiene is always maintained. So as long as the doctor and the nurses have done that, they do not qualify as a contact person.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing what we will do is that we will sanitize the area where the patient was sitting, let's say in the treatment room, the couch, or any railing if they're holding it, the doorknobs, any area that commonly touched by people. So those areas, we will sanitize them with a simple disinfectant like a Dettol or Clorox. We can do that.
Okay. So you don't need special, say, decontamination procedures beyond that?
At the clinic settings, based on these guidelines, we do not require that.
Okay. And are you requiring the clinics to, in the event that a COVID patient is identified at that clinic and transferred to a Ministry of Health hospital, do you require the GP clinic to inform its other patients?
There is no requirement for us to inform other patients.
Okay.
And it is important to know that it's patient-doctor confidentiality.
Mm-hmm.
It's an ethical issue.
Okay.
So we can't release any information to anybody.
Okay. Of course, issues of ethics do come up when we are discussing, you know, the. I guess it's quite a thin line between choosing to treat a patient or investigate whether a patient with the symptoms could be linked to COVID. And of course, the right thing to do, of course, as mandated by the Ministry of Health, is to follow the protocols and to refer to a proper screening hospital. And so I just want to get into ethics a little bit as well. You know, a GP cannot turn a patient away, technically. And even if the patient follows those criteria and is advised to go to a Ministry of Health hospital, you know, and if the patient still insists on seeing a GP, what can the GP do? It's something that we will explore when we come back from the break. I have Dr. Thirunavar. I'm sorry, Dr. Thirunavar. You have a long name, Dr. Arasu. I have Dr. Arasu Raju, Honorary General Secretary, Malaysian Medical Association, in the studio with me. We are discussing the GP's frontline response to COVID-19, and he's already covered the protocol that GP clinics would be following to ensure that its staff and other patients are not exposed to any potential transmission to the virus. We'll be right back on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Shaoik. In the studio with me, Dr. Thirunavar Karasu Raju, Honorary General Secretary of the Malaysian Medical Association. I've got your name right this time, I hope,
yes.
Dr. Arasu. I'm so sorry about that. We are discussing the GP's frontline, the GPs as the frontline response to COVID-19. And of course, GPs, the primary care providers and clinics, they are a significant you know, part of Malaysian Medical Association. And of course, the MMA is working with the GPs to ensure that they have the appropriate information, the knowledge, and to know what steps to take in response to the current COVID-19 outbreak, which, you know, in Malaysia, we are not seeing big numbers. So far, it's looking good for us, but we always have to be vigilant to ensure that there's no wider community transmission. And before the break, Dr. Arasu had described in quite a lot of detail the protocol that has to be followed by GPs in order to ensure that patients, at-risk patients, are clearly identified and referred appropriately to Ministry of Health's screening hospitals to ensure that they get the proper attention and treatment. Dr. Arasu, in Malaysia, the 57 designated screening hospitals, for testing purposes, they are general hospitals. They're not exactly accessible to a wider community the way that a primary care level clinic would be. Do you think there should be more access to screening at the primary level?
I think since this is a novel coronavirus, something very new, and then every day something new, the experts are learning. So I think at the moment is what the government is doing is correct, because mm-hmm. they've identified certain hospitals only to do the... If you notice, initially it was only two centres, IMR and also mm-hmm. Sungai Buloh. And then later they expand to 57 centres.
Mm-hmm.
So I think at the moment is sufficient enough. So probably the only thing could be is that involvement of the general practitioners. Probably at the onset, they could have briefed the general practitioners, and then being the frontliners, how they can play an important role in terms of surveillance. Surveillance means, you know, verbal triaging or what do you call it, visual triaging, like what based on the guidelines, so that we can inform them in the event, even if we suspect someone like that. So this kind of preparedness, probably in the future, it can be done, and then to a bit more, we can do that if the patient were to come to our centres.
Mm. What kind of concerns are you hearing from your members about their capacity to deal with any possible infections or even a possible outbreak?
I think in terms of capacity, I would say, to my knowledge, I don't think so there's been any preparedness plan for the GPs to be involved mm-hmm. in any outbreaks. Probably need to check with the Ministry of Health, but to my knowledge, we do not have. So probably moving forward is something that the government should consider, because having 7,000 clinics with Ministry of Health trained doctors, with the ready facilities, you don't have to invest anything. You just mm-hmm. have to invest to the human capital already being trained, and then be your eyes and the ears
mm-hmm.
in terms of healthcare issues to the government.
Mm-hmm.
Which the government, because as I told earlier, our exposure is 70 million visits a year.
Yeah.
So we'll pick up a lot of things. If there is a way how this certain information can be channeled to the Ministry of Health, MMA strongly believes that that will be an asset to the government.
Mm. And, you know, if we just look at Singapore, they've designated 900 GP clinics as public health preparedness clinics. And these are clinics that, you know, in the past they were activated to deal with issues like the haze and then the H1N1 influenza pandemic. Would something like, is that what you envision for Malaysia?
Yeah, this is something that we can do because you can compare Singapore to any urban areas in Malaysia.
Mm.
For example, Kuala Lumpur, Johor Bahru or Penang. So especially in urban areas where you see the population is concentrated, the volumes are high, probably mm-hmm. these are the areas where they can start off with, and eventually they can spread to the whole country.
Mm. And then coming back, you know, earlier you mentioned ethics. Something that I've been thinking about, even if you have protocols in place to ensure that a potentially infectious patient is not exposed to the staff of a clinic or other patients around, can a GP actually turn a patient away, even if you're following that protocol?
Okay, that is a legal issue. Because under the Private Healthcare Facilities and Services Act, it is our duty to treat patients. Especially if it's an emergency, we can't deny or turn away patients. But of course, there are certain conditions where we can do that if the patient is unruly or becoming that. In the event they are seeking for health, we can't deny.
Mm-hmm.
We have to help them and then find a way how to help them if we can't treat, and how to help them, assist them to a place where can be treated.
Mm.
So it's not an easy position where we can just deny the patient any treatment.
Mm. And what other precautions do GPs have to take? Especially, we are hearing so much that healthcare workers are the ones who are, in a way, at highest risk of transmission. So apart from the measures that you had described to identify the at-risk, isolate, disinfect as much as possible, what other measures are GPs and their staff taking to make sure that they are being protected?
At the GP level, personal protection equipment, PPEs, like, for example, wearing a mask if you're seeing a patient,
mm-hmm.
and sanitizing your hand, the most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the other thing is that what we would like the public to know is that to wear a mask if they come into a GP clinic, if they're having cough and flu. They do not have to wear a mask all the time because there was an acute shortage of masks recently. Hope the minister, former minister or current minister. So announced.
We don't know anything right now about the government.
so announced that there will be 10 million of face masks will be coming in.
Mm-hmm.
So there was an acute shortage. So I think the public also must be responsible to know that they do not have to stock up all these things
mm-hmm.
and then get the right information. Information is available, especially in the Ministry of Health website, infosehat.gov.my.
Mm-hmm.
Very good, simple information for laymen, which is very useful. So it's important for public to play a role also because if there's an acute shortage, the frontliners, the healthcare workers will be affected.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of information through InfoSehat, the Health Ministry has also joined up with Doctor on Call to establish a virtual health advisory portal. What do you think? Would this also help to reduce the unnecessary fear and provide a sort of virtual point of screening first before they even get to the GP's clinics?
It's a good initiative. See, at the end of the day, we do not have data on how many calls they've received and how effective it is. But MMA believes like what Singapore has done, the preparedness clinic. See, at the end of the day, no matter how high-tech you are, you still need the high touch. because as I told earlier, mm-hmm. 70 million visits a year to a GP clinic. You have access.
Mm-hmm.
And then half of the patients who are visiting us are female. Family members.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, in a household, who is the most influential and powerful person in the household?
We like to think that, of course,
the
women are.
Women, right? Women. So actually, as a frontliner, we do play an important role by disseminating correct information to them.
Mm.
So these are the gaps that probably the government should look into to let the GPs to play a more important role in the event there's an outbreak, that we can always complement each other. At the end of the day, it's for the nation.
Mm. And, misinformation doesn't just spread among the layperson. I mean, I think many physicians are also struggling to know what's the right thing to do. So what's their best source of information?
I think at the moment, the best source of information is still from the Ministry of Health.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, even in the Malaysian Medical Association, we encourage and advise our members either to go to the Ministry of Health website
mm-hmm.
or they can look at the WHO websites or also world-renowned established journals like BMJ, Lancet, those kind of journals
mm-hmm.
to get information.
Okay. Do you have a final message for us, Dr. Arasu, about the frontline response to COVID, as well as, again, reiterating what people need to be aware of?
Okay. Number one, for the healthcare workers, please take care of yourself. Please make sure infection control is there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
For the public, don't panic. Get the right information from the right source.
Okay. Thank you very much, Dr. Arasu. That was Dr. Thirunambukarasu Raju, Honorary General Secretary from the Malaysian Medical Association, telling us about the GP's frontline response to COVID-19.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.